Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. It's just going to be us two, David Chan. You know, he's not going to make it. This Thursday thing is killing him. He's going to work it out, though, and he'll be back on that switchboard. Anyways, we got a lot of stuff here on Leaving the Ring to talk about. Just got off the press conference call with 50 Cent and Lou DiBella. I asked him a few questions, including Luis Franco and Billy Dib. Some things as well, and we could talk about it here on Leaving the Ring, or we could roll in the news, or if you guys want to call in and let's talk some boxing, talk this past weekend fights, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. We'll patch you all in. We just have to mention your area code and then just give us your name and what you want to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk, so I'm going to pass it over real quick to Gabriel, see if he has any subjects right now that he wants to talk about before I start throwing out my random thoughts.
Why don't you throw out your random thoughts? I'm just sitting here kind of looking over the fight schedule. It's kind of weird. I'm on location. I'm not in Los Angeles right now. I'm kind of on a research trip, we'll just call it. And my phone is just kind of going crazy. I'm trying to track down a bunch of people. It's weird doing my job from somewhere else, but it's like a full day. I'm trying to get Sergey Zinzerich. We might actually get him during the show, but we're going to get him around the time of the weigh-in. I think we actually might have Larry Merchant sometime around 2:30, 2:15. He's thinking of calling in, but he's also kind of on the road, so I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But I'm excited, dude. I kind of like these afternoon shows. They're a little bit different than the nighttime, and it actually kind of serves my schedule well because I got a bunch of stuff planned for later.
Yeah, you know, and I like doing the earlier shows. I know it kills some of the folks that because we don't announce it until the last minute. You know, and I know they get upset, and they're like, yo, why'd you change the time on us? But sometimes we just got to do this, and this is just one of those days so that we can fix. Because I got a bunch of things I got to take care of as well. But I wanted to get our boxing fix in here on Leaving the Ring so that we can make sure that at least we can get our three-hour broadcast out for the listeners that tune in every day, our loyal listeners that tune in every Thursday night. Anyways, we got Oscar Molina. Who is the brother of Carlos Molina and Javier Molina. There's three brothers. They're all pro fighters. Oscar's the latest one to turn pro. He was out for injury, so now it's been anticipated to see him get in there. He's a twin of Javier Molina. So I'm really interested. I had a chance to watch that documentary that came out, was Born and Bred, which was by, I believe it was by Jimmy Freemer, I think his last name was. And we even had him on, the director and writer of that documentary on Leaving the Ring. And this was like three years. Actually, I think it was like 4 years when we started off. We had him on when they were still working on getting it on the big screen. So anyways, he's going to be coming on about 2 o'clock here on Leaving the Ring. And then we should roll over to some other guests. We were talking to some other people, possibly getting them on here as well on Leaving the Ring Radio. But for right now, what we'll do is just I'll talk a little bit about that press conference, which I found very interesting with 50 Cent. You know, he mentioned that this is his very first, even though Gamboa was on the top rank on the undercard of Juan Manuel Marquez and Manny Pacquiao, but this is his first on-hand at the Foxwoods Casino with one of his fighters who's going to be the main event, which is Billy Dib, against Luis Franco, which is a fighter from Lou DiBella Promotions. And, you know, it's interesting how he's saying that, you know, he's not going to announce how many other dates he has because this is like, it's pretty much, the way I took it was I'm learning as I go. So I'm not going to overwhelm myself with commitments with a bunch of dates because I'm still learning in the process of how to be a promoter. And even though he's got I think he has the muscle and the star power to get solid dates, hard dates with networks who are probably be, you know, clawing over each other to work with 50 Cent because he brings such a massive mainstream draw that I think dates would just be thrown at him. You know what I mean? Almost like at the Wall Street when you're calling out numbers, you know, just being flung at him of whatever date he would want. But he's doing the smart move, Gabriel. I think that's a smart move by saying, you know what, I'm going to take one at a time. and I'm going to see what adjustments I have to make and where would be the better place for me to promote my fighters or to work along with other guys. I think the Lou DiBella collaboration is a good start for him, just because of the fact that Lou DiBella is a New Yorker. He's real brass, you know. He's a guy that's not going to hold back in what he's thinking and what he believes should be done. I think it's a good combination. I think you can learn a lot from Lou DiBella, and I did mention that to them.
That's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting combo, especially in terms of personalities. You know, Fitty's a guy that is a wily guy, a wily businessman, very smart man, very measured in what he says, but I think kind of an enlightened guy as well. And Lou seems pretty chill. He can go kind of crazy sometimes, but he's been around the block in this business from being a top HBO executive who helped craft a lot of our taste in the sport. Certainly that's fallen off now that Lou's gone. I kind of wish he was still there. But then, you know, also starting as a manager and then moving towards promoter. So I originally think his company was a management company, and then they became a promotional company. All that ground level experience, I mean, as successful as 50 Cent is in everything that he does, boxing is always kind of – it's almost like going into a land war in Asia or trying to take over Afghanistan. You know, it sucks everybody in, and everybody thinks they're going to do it different.
Right.
And everybody ends up doing it exactly the same way. Like Steve Kim said to me, you know, you don't change the game. The game changes you. And that's – I think it's, you know, it's an axiom for a reason. It's very, very true. I'm curious to see if – how long Fitty stays engaged in it. In boxing as a promoter, how long he really wants to do this and how big he really wants to do this. Because let's be honest, he's kind of on other guys' shows. He's not fully promoting himself. I mean, this one's like a co-promotion. We'll see if they really do it up. But, you know, this is kind of a DiBella show with a 50 Cent fighter on it, and that's the flavor. But I want to see if he actually does his own shows top to bottom. Will he build a stable that will sustain that, or will he work with other promoters to kind of fill up his card like he's doing here? Only he's kind of footing the bill. I'm very curious to see that next step from him.
I am too. I'm really curious. And you know the thing too, I liked what he said was another caller that was on the call in the preface call, press conference call for this Friday night fight, was that he was asking about. He was the one who was asking about whether or not if he had other scheduled dates for any events under the SMC promotions. And he said that, you know, he's working at one at a time, but at the same time, you know, he's signing other fighters that we have already heard of. And that kind of told me whether, you know, that he plans to stick around for some time here in the boxing game. He's really planning to make his mark as a promoter or possibly could become just a pure manager, you know, because like Lou DiBella said, there's a lot of corners and a lot of in and outs in the boxing promotional side. You know, it's just not that cut and dry. It's similar in terms of politics when it comes to music, which 50 Cent is used to, but there's other things that are almost involved with it. You know, you have to deal with not just with the promoter, with the manager, with the matchmaker, with the judges, the commission, the fighter themselves and the fighter's entourage and father and mother, if they're involved in there. So there's a lot of entities in boxing that you have to deal with. It's just not one sole thing that you're dealing with. Not saying that music doesn't have all that as well, but a lot of times with music, you have the music company itself with whoever's in the staff that you're dealing with, but you're not dealing with all these other personalities, you know, like when you sign on for another rapper to feature on your record, you're not dealing with their parents and you're not dealing with their coach and you're not dealing with their agency and their management, you know, you're just dealing with that artist and you're dealing with the record company. So this is interesting to see where 50 really kind of falls in line with. Does he fall in line as a promoter or does he end up falling in line as a manager?
Well, that's the thing. That line has been blurred in the last several years, you know, as like Floyd Mayweather's company, before it was called the Money Team, it was Mayweather Promotions. I'm not sure if it's which one's what name he's using now. I think it's the Money Team. But that company, to my knowledge, still doesn't have a promoter's license, at least in Nevada. That was the sign to me that Fitty was serious. He got one in New York, he got one in Nevada. He's going to do shows, you know, he's a promoter. But he's still kind of acting more like a packager, you know. But he's also young in the sport. His first two fights, you know, you don't start out with a stable. You build a stable. He's got, you know, just a very few fighters, and they're the caliber that they can't all really be on the same show because of the money that would be involved. But you saw that with Floyd over the last few years. You know, this is a co-promotion, even though you don't have a promoter's license, and they'd have fighters on the card, but they're not really promoting, and you didn't really see a big media push for those guys. Thinking of one in particular, and so really, are you promoting, or you just have some fighters, and you have another revenue stream through this guy, but you know, or whatever it is that you're doing. That's kind of happened a lot in this business these days, or the guys that try to be a promoter, which is interesting. I heard recently that or they want to be an advisor on the other side of the sport. There's a prominent guy, well, I don't know if prominent's the right word, that's in, you know, the Blog Talk universe, does a radio show, that's now becoming an advisor to people, kind of trying to play that role, maybe slash manager a little bit. I've seen it, you know, Greg Leone did it, and has done it rather successfully for himself years ago. But, you know, at the same time, I respect Greg because he kind of seems to have let go of being a media guy and is instead being a boxing advisor. He understands that conflict of interest. This person, however, does not. But that would also require that person to have the person I'm speaking of that wants to become an advisor to have scruples, and they don't. It's an interesting business, you know, and I'm curious to see. Because it doesn't really – anybody can get into boxing. You can litigate your way in. You can wheel your way in. You can know somebody and kind of work your way to a position of prominence. I mean, look at the matchmakers over at Golden Boy. I mean, both those guys, they're not ex-fighters. I mean, one's best friend of Oscar. He used to, I think, run like a company that filled up like chips, you know, dispensers, machines. And the other guy was a chauffeur, I think, for Marco Antonio Barrera. And they worked their way to this position. You know, hard work gets you places, or knowing the right people. In Fitty's case, he's rich enough that he can just buy himself into the sport,
right,
pick up a couple fighters, and go. But the thing is, like, no matter how you get in, it's just, you know, what you do when you get there. Does he want to reinvent the game? Does he just want to make some money off the game? Does he want to improve it, leave it better than he found it? We'll see. You know, I hope the answer to those are all positive. I hope he doesn't just treat it like a toy, because this is people's lives, you know, and careers. And but he doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. Whenever he swoops in to do something, he seems to want to do it right. So,
you know, the thing is that I think everybody, when they start off to get into boxing, especially if you're looking to make money into this business and get into the whole promotional deal, I think you come in with good intentions. But it's almost like what happened to Anakin Skywalker. Eventually, you get pulled into that dark side, and I've seen that from some of the people that in the business of boxing, who I've met and have communicated with, and had a chance to kind of watch their careers grow. You know, they come in with the right intentions. They come in gun ho and want to make a mark and make a change, but then slowly it just kind of sucked in, because they end up realizing they're just not up against one wall they got to break through. There's numerous walls, you know, and it's the hardest thing, especially with, you know, people in general don't like negativity. People don't want to be known as the bad guy or the guy that's seeking for the truth, the guy that's, you know, really digging somewhere they shouldn't be. You know, they shouldn't be in that backyard pulling the weeds. Let the weeds grow. That they become discouraged, and they become those people that rather just sit in the living room and watch on the other side, knowing in plain view that what's happening is wrong. I'd like to see a little longer what goes on with 50 Cent as a promoter. Does he get sucked in? Does he become another Darth Vader of the sport? Or does he become, you know, one of the rebellious guys that says, you know what, this ain't right, and this is what's got to happen. He definitely has enough money to not, I don't think, be bought out or persuade, but you know what? There's that old saying, there's never enough money to have.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You know, I just think, you know, I've looked at Fitty being in the business as a positive thing. He's funny, he's fun, he's intelligent. He seems to be doing right by his fighters. I mean, I think a lot of people characterize the $1.3 million that he paid for Gamboa, and I even did it first. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. He bought out his contract with Top Rank so then he could put him on a Top Rank show. But I have a feeling that $1.3 million to Top Rank was one fee, and I think what he was really doing for Gamboa was buying the guy's freedom. I think he genuinely cares about the guy, and that he kind of released him from whatever situation he was in. I'm just taking a guess here, but it was just – listening to Fitty talk about his fighter and how he cared about him, he wasn't looking at him like a, you know, this is my prized dog. You know, he was treating him like a human being, and seemed to have sympathy for the guy and empathy for his situation. I think people need to look past all, you know, the kind of businesses. Everybody's a business expert that doesn't have any money. I've noticed that in this sport too. You know, myself, I always have to admit that I'm not a businessman. I'm always trying to learn how the promotional end of this business works, how the inside of this business works. I think it's a smarter man that acknowledges when he doesn't know something. And so I look at that situation, and to me, I was actually very impressed with how he handled it. The whole thing, he could have really blown up Floyd. He didn't. He showed class, kind of was upset that their friendship had been damaged by the whole situation, but didn't air his dirty laundry. He handled the whole thing like a pro, like a gentleman. So,
well,
you know, I respect what he's doing. I want to see, you know, I'm going to give him time and be patient, too. I'm not one of these people that wants everything right now.
You know, I think 50 is really what a lot of hip-hop, people that are not in tune with hip-hop, they don't know the history of hip-hop. You know, a lot, you speak to, like, older folks or even people that are not from the urban neighborhoods, you know, the first thought is of hip-hop is you're gang-related or, you know, you're this thug, uneducated person that can't speak well and make bad choices. In the beginning of hip-hop, it was about expression. It was about, you know, throwing something out there that you're around all the time and making a negative into a positive. And you can see that with 50 Cent. 50 Cent stands for a change. And when you hear him talk, when he answered my question about if he was going to expose any of the bleats of the darkness of boxing, you know, he said it right. You know, my beefs are normally out of competition. You know, we're competitive. In the hip-hop world, you're competitive. So it rolls over sometimes to being negative, but at the end of the day, it's really just because we're competing against each other. And, you know, just like in any sport, fighters are going to compliment each other, but at the same time, they're not going to sit there and go like, yeah, he can beat me. The name of the game is, no, he can't beat me. It's my job to beat him. It's my job to convince myself, not just the audience and the people watching me, to know that I'm the best. And I think that's the way he carries himself. And that's a way of maturity, that the way he does things. Because like you said, he had the opportunity to out Floyd Mayweather, but he didn't do it. He held back, he reserved himself, and he conducted himself as more of a business-like person. And, you know, I think he represents the hip-hop world and the community very well. Coming into boxing, I think he's going to be able to represent himself, but I'm just wondering how long it's going to take for him for the street to come out just a bit when somebody tries to shice him just, you know, from behind and try to get over on him because, you know, we're only human. We can only take so much. I had a chance to ask Billy, him, you know, with his 50 Cent fighter, does he have to really show out? I mean, to me, this is an opportunity of really showing that you made the right choice by signing me on to your banner. So he has got to be explosive. He's got to look good. He's only fought in Australia ever since his loss to Stephen Luvanow. He hasn't been back to the States. So I think there's a lot more riding for him. Fighting Luis Franco, a Cuban fighter who lost and it was a controversial loss, I think it's a tough test for him for a comeback type of fight. But at the same time, Luis's record is not that big. You know, I know that Cuban fighters, they have a huge amount of amateur fights, but in a lot of ways, I just don't see Luis. I don't see Luis really being too dominant against Billy. I think Lou DiBella was really trying to throw a bone out there for 50 Cent, being that this is his first promotion.
I'm just – Billy is who he is, you know. Stephen Luevenow, that guy.
Stephen Luevenow, yeah.
Yeah, one of the funkier names. I would like Stephen, too. I don't know if you've seen him recently. Boy, that
– he's gained weight.
Yeah, you would never know that he was fought at the lower weight. It's like a totally different dude. But, hey, you know, one of the better management jobs and one of the better managed careers I've ever seen is Luevenow. He left the business with a house, wife, health, money in the bank. You know, he did very well. You know, Cameron Duncan had him, I was like Stephen. He was.
I think even the Garcias. I mean, the Garcias really do have a good, you know, they have a good head on their shoulders. I think they try to help out their fighters, almost like the way the Espinoza boxing crew does. You know, so I think it really depends on the surrounding of people that you put yourself with that helps you out, and we kind of saw that with Stephen. You know, he did well.
Yeah. Oh, no, he was a well-schooled fighter, too. Hell of a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
For a guy that didn't have, like, a lot, they did a lot with him, you know? I mean, he wasn't spectacular in any one way. He was a good counterpuncher, tough as nails. I guess that was his attribute. He was just tough as shit. And just a real, like, just a real pro. He was always in shape. But back to Billy Dibb, because I'm more excited about talking about Stephen LeWebineau than I am about Billy Dibb. Billy needs to... He needs to impress.
He needs to really, really impress. And see, and I think that in a lot of ways, I could be wrong, but this is how I refer to a guy that's jumping into a pit of fire right away before having a bucket of water. 50 Cent jumping into this pit could be strongly be a possibility he gets scorched because his fighter's not ready, even though he's been busy in Australia. But that's Australia. Now he's coming back to the States. The Cuban fighters, we're starting to see a little bit more of these Cuban fighters having more of an aggressive style. But their pedigree of amateurs is carried with them. You know, this is in their blood. But at the same time, Lou DiBella signing on with 50 Cent and want to continue – other scheduled dates, possible scheduled dates. Do you get somebody that's going to blow out that promoter's fighter right away, or do you have a sacrifice lamb? I think that Luis Franco is a sacrifice.
Well, this is an interesting fight because, Luis Franco is an older guy, so he probably is the sacrifice. But it's just funny in that his last fight, it was a loss to Mauricio Munoz, right? It was a split decision. And this was back in October of 2012. Well, it was an IBF featherweight title eliminator. Well, now he's fighting for the IBF featherweight belt. It's just like
right.
Some guys win those eliminators and they don't get their title shot. Here he goes. He gets his title shot. So maybe it is, maybe this guy matches up better with Billy Dibb. I mean, Billy's, I've just never really been big on him.
Neither have I.
But to his credit, he bounced back from that Stephen LeWebineau loss. It was 2008, and he's been on a long winning streak ever since.
But it's a questionable running streak as well, though.
Well, it's all in Australia. So, right. Even if this was all in Mexico or all in Argentina, of course, yeah, we'd be like, well, who are these people? I've seen some of the fights. I mean, he's okay. He is who he is, I think he's become more seasoned. He's not as ugly to watch as he was. He mixes it up. He's tough, but I mean, he's more of a boxer. He just doesn't have a full identity. So I think you're putting him in with this a Cuban guy, more of a rugged older guy. He's 31. It's going to be a rough and tumble fight. I don't know how pretty this is going to be, but I always know that going into a Billy Dibb fight. But to your point about Fitty, it is interesting seeing him. He showed up and it was like, okay, I picked up Andre Durrell, I got, Gamboa, which is an interesting property, but kind of a flawed property. It's rusty. You don't know what weight. He's kind of a tweener. He's got a big old head, a big frame.
Right.
But, he's not very tall and short-ass arms. But, okay, good pickup. If you can do some things with him, match him well, you could do well. Andre Durrell, kind of out. He kind of returned, but he had that brain thing. The fans don't really trust him. He's never really been a draw. He was just coming into his own when his career was cut short for a minute, and now he's returned. That's kind of funky. But then when you go Billy Dibb, you're like, did somebody meet Fitty in a bar, and they started selling him like a bridge, and then I got the fighters?
I don't know. 50 Cent maybe.
Here's Billy Dibb. I felt like somebody got one over on him.
I think so, too.
No disrespect. But
I know. I know. I hear exactly what you're saying. I actually even said this on one of our on our Leave It in the Ring Gmail account. I was asked about this whole 50 and Billy Dibb thing, and I said, the same thing. He named out the roster of what 50's taking over with. And I said, in some strange way, could 50 Cent be the Buddy McGirt of the promoters? who picks up all the guys that really nobody wants, and it's kind of left the leftovers. I think that just like when Oscar De La Hoya started off in his promotional company, he was picking up a lot of older champions, but they did have names. But he was also picking up some other fighters that didn't have names or were more risky, and it was just to build that platform so he can move up. I think 50's also in that position. You can't start up in the hill. He's starting somewhere. It's not down in the bottom, but it's sure midway into the mountain. So it's a really interesting thing. I wonder if he's going to stick with that trend or with that trend of what's happening, the fighters that he does get and realize they're not a major draw, and they might not have the pizzazz that he's hoping that they should have for boxing fans to clamor and go, whoa, we want to see these guys, that he just kind of rolls into where other fighters and other people kind of take him a little bit more serious and go, okay, now he really wants to be a boxing promoter, and he does have best interest in the fighters themselves, and he can pick up some bigger names. But it's to be seen, man. It's really to be seen. I'm just seeing right here that Amir Khan and Humberto Soto is a strong possibility it might happen, but also seeing that Eric Gomez, who's the matchmaker for Golden Boy, saying that first he's heard of it, but there's three other names for Amir Khan. But I wouldn't trust everything that Eric Gomez says, because I've asked him something, and he'll say, like, oh, I didn't know about that. Then later, boom, it's out there, you know, that the fight is on. So if this fight is to happen, we all know why. Come on. You know, I know some folks are out there on Twitter or on Facebook acting like they're surprised, saying it's a garbage fight. Listen, you know, this is a guy that's still developing with Virgil Hunter. Do you really think they were going to throw him in tough after that? Back with Danny Garcia, I didn't think that was a great idea, even when Amir Khan was talking about having a rematch with Danny Garcia, who's got a fight coming up with Zab Judah. If anything, Amir Khan, I think you need to get your bearings back together. Learn as much as you can from Virgil Hunter. Do as many fights that they will allow you as a tune-up fight so that you can get some more money. And then when you're ready for the big stage again, hopefully you have the tools, you have the knowledge that Virgil Hunter is going to embed in you, that you're going to perform right. If not, you can look at it this way. You fought all these tune-up fights, you made all this money, so when you hit the big stage and you lose, guess what? You're pretty okay. You're stacked with some dollar bills there to hold you off for the remainder of your lifespan here. So there's some things that I think Amir Khan and his camp need to think about. Humberto Soto, do we want to watch it? Hell no, I don't want to see that fight. Come on, you know, but.
Well, Showtime or HBO turned it down, you know, in September, earlier in the year, I think it was earlier in the year that it was being talked about. And I mean, I don't think it was for September, but it was being talked about in September. And HBO didn't want it. I mean, you got two guys who've been stopped in their last fights. You know, Khan's had his comeback fight now, but it's just not. Humberto Soto is not a 140-pounder, in my opinion. He's going up there because that's where the money is. But he's just not that guy. You know, he's – at 135, I thought he was pushing his ceiling. I mean, and now at 140, I mean, it's just no question, you know, that he's not a bigger weight class guy. As tall as he is, either that or, you know, he needs to change his strength and conditioning program. But and I don't mean get on drugs. I just mean, you know, he's not going about it the right way, getting to that weight. He just doesn't look very strong. He doesn't look very durable. He's certainly not a welterweight. I mean, he won the last fight, but, like, I don't really know why I would want to see this fight. You know what are you going to tell me? You know, Mosley Malignaggi next?
Well, this,
you know, oh, wait.
This
yeah,
was,
they already did.
Right, exactly. This is my thought. You do two more fights that really are not a big significant. Get as much momentum as you can get back in the ring. Get your confidence back. If you could stick around at 140, I would stick around and wait for an Adrian Broner.
Hmm.
There's a big money fight there for you. Do I think he could beat Adrian? I don't think he can, but I think it gives Adrian Broner a big run for his money, and it brings up a huge draw. Adrian Broner and their team are looking for the big money fights. They're looking to really get in the mainstream. This is a good way of attracting other new fans from the UK and around the world. You know, that to me would be a good way of moving him to 140 so he can have a taste at 140 before he starts calling out the rest of the fighters at 140. I know he says he's sticking around at 130. So we can clean out the division. But, you know, a big money fight with Amir Khan. Let's not forget, even though Amir's been knocked out, even though Amir has lost, he still does have a big, huge following. He still brings money to the table.
Yeah, without question. You know, I think, you know, Khan is an interesting guy. I mean, he's always in exciting fights. I've never really been – I mean, the McCloskey fight I was kind of bored in. But generally, there's always drama because you could either – he's either going to get knocked out or he's going to knock you out. But I don't know what you do with him as a promoter. I mean, I've always said that his growth was kind of stunted by coming to America far too soon. They didn't fully develop him as a star over there. And he came over here, and he doesn't really sell that many tickets. I mean, they give away more than almost as much as they sell, it would feel like. And looking at the numbers, you know, that bears out. He hasn't really grown. And then he's got these losses. And he recovered from one, but and the Peterson thing, you could walk away from that and say, well, you know, we know what we know about that fight now. But then you've got the Garcia knockout. I mean, how do you come back? He still treats himself like he's a star, and everybody around him acts like he's a star.
Right.
But the reality is he's actually not a star. He's in good fights, and he's a name in the sport. But, I mean, he doesn't really get to dictate anything. So it's going to be interesting seeing where he goes in terms of network, who I believe his deal, unless it's been re-upped and I missed it, I don't believe Khan has a TV deal with HBO anymore. I think that last fight was his last fight. So it'll be interesting to see, does he move over to Showtime and do the whole exodus along with the rest of and make that his permanent home? Does he want to go back to HBO, or is he going to stay kind of a free agent and try to work out TV deals for himself? Where does Khan go from here? And as a fighter, I mean, yeah, you got to kind of match him worrying about his development with Virgil Hunter. I kind of agree with Virgil. I'm not sure if the chin is terrible. I think he just fights in a hurry and always has and leaves himself wide open. He sticks around for the receipt.
Knocked out with two power punches.
But he got cut. There's that. And he also got punched in the neck against Garcia. And he did get back up, you know. So, I don't know. He's got a lot of heart.
I rock with Madonna. I mean, you know, these are three guys that can punch. So when people throw out there that he doesn't have a chin, he's very chinny. How many people wouldn't be chinny against those three guys? You know, getting punched solid. When these guys connect, they're going to cause some damage here. So there's a lot of interesting things there for Amir Khan. But I agree with you about the whole, you know, being a star. There's a reality check that Amir Khan needs, and that reality check should really be settling in with being with Virgil Hunter and being around these other fighters. It's just I get the sense it's a different atmosphere from the wild card to where Virgil Hunter's at now, because now it's a private gym. It's not the King's gym anymore. They're working out a private gym, so there's more of a seclude and more of a, I say, equal treatment, if anything. Well, the wild card was a bit of a spread sometimes, you know, until they would close it when Manny was down when he was training. So there's some really interesting things out there. Hey, I like the fact that King Carlos Molina is getting back in the fight game. ESPN Friday nights. He's going to be in the Chicago Pavilion February 1st. He's going to be facing Corey the Next Generation Sphinx, and it's for the IBF Junior Middleweight title eliminator. I hate that eliminator thing, but, you know, you got to kind of throw it out there. Carlos Molina is a guy that, you know, was being really successful against James Kirtland and then finally got caught when Kirtland turned up the heat, when Kirtland was able to shake off those cobwebs and, get his legs underneath them, because we all know that he wasn't in fighting weight before the fight. He had to make that weight. He had to struggle to make that weight. So it's really interesting to see Carlos Molina. Spinks is a guy that before, I think a lot of us used to cringe, go like, don't really want to see him. But seeing that Spinks' legs have gotten older, he's become a bit more exciting, in my opinion, because he sits there and he has to trade. He can't use those legs as much. He can't be as mobile. He can't be as elusive, that he has to stand and trade just a bit with Carlos Molina. Well, I'm wondering if the Molina trade of being a mauler, which he brought into as a game plan against James Kirtland, does that stick, or does he go back and revert to being a volume puncher, which we knew about before?
Well, I mean, with Kirkland, there's a lot more problems than just who's he going to fight next? You know, I mean, I've heard estimates that he's like in the 200s, you know, weight wise.
Right.
So I don't so see. I've been trying to get an interview with him this last week, and
the both of us have.
It's kind of funny. Well, I mean, I've covered him. Not, you know, we've had him on the show at pretty amazing times, but I mean, I've covered him 7 years. I mean, he's like the number one guy that I covered. Since the beginning, he knows this. We have history. He knows who I am. We used to speak. I don't know what's going on with James. I don't think, you know, because he's done these other interviews recently, and someone that did them with me was like, "Well, I'll talk to James for you." And I'm like, "I got his number. I've been trying to talk to him. He's just not. He doesn't want to talk to somebody that's going to hit him with the truth." Is really the bottom line. And I know. I don't know about the other people. I can't speak for them. But for myself, I know the impact of what he did with the black pill allegation and all of this stuff, the impact that it's having on like Pops Billingsley and Ann Wolfe. Ann's a survivor. She's going to deal with it. But Pops, he's an old guy kind of at the end of the road, you know?
Right.
And so, I mean, people that's kind of – they did interviews with James recently, and that kind of got people talking about him as if he's in the mix still. I just don't consider him to be in the mix. And really, and I'm not saying until he talks to me, but I guess really until we talk and I kind of hear things have moved forward from him, and then I talk to his manager and I get the same story instead of a different one, then, you know, we can start talking about that as him being a viable guy again. But right now, I don't see anything changing anytime soon for him. I don't know if Biddy's going to get involved with him, especially if you know, what you're buying in boxers is you're kind of buying a business. You know, you're a larger corporation absorbing a business, and you hope that business runs well and will make money for the larger corporation.
I kind of see it more like a relationship. When you're buying of fighters, you're buying a package. You're buying their baggage.
Well, but that's the thing, though. Well, I don't think that way, though. I don't think business people would think – I mean, I think as reporters and people that are in the business, we understand that that's actually what happens, that it is kind of a relationship. But I think that's more manager-fighter. If you're a promoter, I mean, you just want to know that the fight camp works well, this guy shows up on time, and he wins.
Right.
You don't want to hear your problems about how you feel about your bad contract or this and that. I mean, honestly, I haven't really seen their contracts. So, with Cameron and all of that, for me to really say James is completely insane, and I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the situation's like at a stalemate, and it doesn't appear to be really changing. And what I look at is, you know, and Golden Boy and I have gone back and forth. I have no love for them. But they stayed with him. Oscar went to court and backed this guy. They kept the promotional contract, you know, it stayed there. I mean, I don't know if they could have broken it, but they did as much as they could for James, honored him. They brought him right back. I thought they rushed him. But again, that's a promotional company counting on the guy actually going to camp and doing the right things in camp, and that his business would be working. He was saying, yeah, I'm ready to fight. Let's fight. And then he would just drop all that crazy weight, and he loses to Ishida. And then he does the same thing kind of crazy again right before the Molina fight, kind of screws himself up again. I just think... yeah, there's something wrong there. I don't think the problem, when you look at James's history, I'm not sure the problem is everybody else. It kind of seems like the problem is James.
I agree.
You know? And I care about him. That's why I'm just straight up honest. I'm not going to – if we do an interview with him, it's not going to be, yeah, man, yeah, yeah. You know, we talked for a long time off record, and I was respectful of him that way. Like, do you want to come out with this? I'm not ready to. Cool. We talked a long time, the last time we talked, and then when I – right before I did that article, I think in September, and when I came, I said, well, I'm going to talk to everybody. I'm going to go on record, and I'm going to, you know, really do my due. And when I came back to him, he said, you know, you want to go on record now? And he just never returned my calls, never got back with me. And so I kept calling. I had a deadline. Finally, I was like, all right, enough.
Forget it. Yeah.
Yeah, I gave him a few days, you know. So that's just my opinion. I don't think he wants to talk to somebody that is going to spit the truth to him about, or at least just be honest in their assessment of things and maybe not see things his way. And that's probably why he's avoiding it. But really, you know, that's just a sub story to the fact that nothing has really changed. And I don't think anything's going to.
I don't think so too, unfortunately. You know, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're doing a early show instead of a 5 o'clock show. We'll probably go back to our schedule next week. Our regular schedule, so I apologize if you don't know we're on live right now. But, you're going to catch the archive a little later. So anyways, let's talk about this past week in fights. Mikey Garcia, very impressive, did exactly what I thought he had to get done. Didn't think he was able to get it done because it's easier to be said than to do. And, you know, we both said that. It's not... It wouldn't be impossible to drop Orlando Salido because he's aggressive. He does come in, and that's the way to catch him is when he's coming in and trying to land these big shots. Michael Garcia was on his back leg when he was countering, and he was moving backwards, and that's what made those knockdowns, I think, a little extra special. From that first knockdown from the first round to drop, he was dropped twice, Orlando Salido, in that first round. I don't think he ever recovered from it. I think that it did him. I think it did massively to his mental state. I think it damaged it. I think it made him worry. I think it made him be a little bit more, even more aggressive and more anxious of trying to get his back. And it just caused for Mikey Garcia to have a dominant win over Orlando Salido. Mikey Garcia gave him all the big ups for it. It was a great, great win. I think that now there's no question about where he stands in his division and where he stands as whether or not he's ready to move up to the next level.
I was really impressed, man. Mikey, he really just, I didn't really expect that. You know, I expected Salido to push him and to bring fight out of him. What I didn't expect was the guy to be knocking people out while moving backwards. You know, I thought that was, or knocking people down rather, you know. I was talking to his strength and conditioning coach a few days ago, Daryl Hudson. And that was something he said they specifically worked on, was exercises to be explosive while moving backwards, because that's what was going to happen in this fight. You know, Salido was going to be coming, and you better be able to deal with him while he does, while he bum rushes you. And I mean, he did exactly that. I thought it was very impressive. He just looked like the perfect boxer puncher, you know, that they had envisioned for him in terms of his economic output, you know, his offensive output. I thought this was the most exciting in the from round to round that he'd ever been. But then you get into the kind of back end of the fight, and Salido starts to get kind of rough. Mikey's offense starts to go away a little bit. The whole headbutt thing, because we had seen it in the Roman fight, you know, versus Pelos Garcia. It was the same thing,
right,
where it was a rough fight. Both guys had been down, but Pelos seemed to be taking the worst of it. Then there was like a cut, and I wasn't sure if it was a headbutt or a cut. And looking at the tape, it's kind of hard to tell if it was a headbutt or a punch, rather. And I was close to that corner, and I remember Garcia specifically, like, well, was it from a headbutt? It was a headbutt. Okay, we're going to go to the cards, because they hadn't gone to the fourth yet. So, you know, the fight would just be called. And so that's exactly what happened. And he kind of influenced – I mean, he did exactly the right thing. He's a smart corner man, you know, aware of where they are in the fight. You know, you've got all these knockdowns. Everything's banked. Your guy's maybe fading a little bit, and it's the only chance for the old guy to start getting rough. He starts to get rough. Your guy's nose gets broken. I didn't think it was intentional. I thought it was more just – you know, it's just controlling space. You know, guy's throwing punches, he's moving into space, his head comes with it. Salido's always fought that way. It didn't seem like an out of the norm move. I'm not crazy about a fighter going, my nose is broke, I got to quit, you know, or I can't breathe. I don't think he quit, but, you know, of taking that injury way out. I mean, I can understand a shoulder's popped out, but then, you know, Bernard Hopkins fought with one arm and won by knockout. You know, you can think of Arthur Abraham and his multiple broken jaw. Everybody's pain threshold is different. And I'm curious to see, because this is how I look at it. It was like the corner did their job. They took control of the situation and looked out for the fighter, protected him from himself, protected him in general. I am curious to see if Mikey would have gone forward with that nose and what he would have done with that nose. You know, like, he didn't get a chance to kind of be saved from himself. He just kind of came out, oh, my nose is broken, and, oh, it was a headbutt, boom, the fight's over. I would have liked to have seen what Mikey did with that injury. Just curious, you know, I want to see the depth of guts. But, you know, I'm a fight fan, so that's what I want to see. That's what we came for. but I don't take anything away from him. I don't think it's – I wouldn't call him a quitter. Salido's kind of pissed off about it, wants his rematch, but it's like, dude, you got dropped four times. I know the back end of the fight – you know, he got dropped against Lopez, too. He's been down and won before, but –
But this was, to me, this was just a bit different in the way he was put down. It was twice, and these were clean knockdowns, you know. They were perfectly timed, they were precise, and they were short. He never saw them. He never saw the shots coming to him, those hooks. And it just showed me that the adjustment that Salido needed, and let me take this really quick. Because some folks were like, do you think that he got old overnight? I think that Mikey made him look old. I don't think he got old overnight. I think we just saw what a prime fighter supposed to look like against a seasoned prime fighter. And Mikey had all the right tools. He had all the right adjustments. He was a thinking man in there. He saw the openings, and he took advantage. He didn't hesitate. You know, he didn't act like a newbie in the ring. He acted like of somebody that was comfortable, somebody that was ready to execute, and somebody that really studied what Salido was going to bring in the ring. So asking for a rematch, you know what? I don't see why the Garcia would want to take the rematch. There's other bigger and better fights out there for them, unless it just boils down that there's nothing there for them to take on. Of course, you take the Salido fight. Was it a back and forth? Was it exciting for us to want to say, let's watch it again? Absolutely not. I don't want to see it. I wouldn't want to see it. I'd rather see Salido go after somebody else and just get his bearings back.
Yeah, I don't need to see a rematch. I think Mikey knocks him out next time and knocks him out quicker.
I think so too. I think Mikey figured him out. Now he knows exactly what he's up against. There's not going to be any surprises. I don't see how Orlando can bring any other surprises. But then again, you know, all the fighters have surprised us in so many different ways. You know, but I think right now Mikey Garcia is in the top of his game, and he definitely showed it on Saturday night. Gennady Golovkin, man, you know, that guy, I don't know why there was so much criticism of him, you know, saying why didn't he knock out Rosaldo so quick, what was taking him so long. I liked what I saw, man. I really did. I the patience of this guy is a bit scary. The power that this man brings, man. I mean, it's some real true strength there that he poses. And yeah, applaud Gabriel Rosaldo of him taking this beating. But at the same time, let's applaud what Gennady was doing. I mean, he was getting caught with an uppercut, and then he adjusted to that, and then he was landing his uppercut. One thing that I love that I think we need to be really impressed by is that jab. Was that jab just thumping or what?
Oh, it's brutal. It's brutal. I don't understand what people. Everybody sets this bar. You know, they want the perfect fighter, the perfect fight. It can't always be that. You know, he had the flu a couple days before. Apparently, I kind of wish they hadn't brought that out. I'm not really big. I don't want to know that stuff. You know, it kind of diminishes what your guy did. You know, it's like an excuse. I don't know about you, but I was really offended, or offended is a big word. I was annoyed by Max Kellerman's interview with Golovkin. Because if you listen to the whole thing, I thought Andre Ward did a fantastic job as a commentator.
The only thing I like what Andre Ward said, let me just throw this out there before you finish your thought, because I saw you talking about that on Twitter. The only thing I did not like what Andre Ward said was the comparisons to Julio Cesar Chavez and saying that Gennady had better defense. I was like, no, he didn't. You know, I think Gennady still has a lot to learn when it comes to defense. We never saw Julio get that marked up until he got way older, you know. And I think a lot of people don't respect or appreciate what Julio Cesar Chavez did in the ring, because he used to cast those punches. We talk about parrying and parrying him right in his face. I mean, the only other fighter that I know that kind of pairs similar to him is Brandon Rios, Bam Bam.
I would agree with that. Yeah, yeah. Rios definitely reminds me more of Chavez Jr. than Golovkin. Doesn't remind me anything of, or Chavez Sr. rather, doesn't remind me anything of Chavez Sr. Maybe the stalking pressure. Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. But in terms of what I liked about Andre, and it's something that I think has lacked on HBO for a long time, is people seeing actually calling the fight. You know, a lot of times they talk about other things. They start to chuckle amongst themselves. Like that's a big thing in radio. It's something you and I rarely do. We do it for a couple seconds and then we're done with it. But like that guy talk where you got to talk amongst yourselves. You guys, we're not here to see you. We're not here to really even listen to you. But if you got to be here, just call the fight. And I thought Bob Papa and Andre Ward were having a really good conversation about the fight that was taking place in both fights. And I thought Max Kellerman he's like that annoying kid, you know, that just kind of keeps popping off. He has a lot of knowledge. He's seen a lot of fights. I don't know if Max trains or whatever. That doesn't really matter to me that much. But, you know, like Larry Merchant's a credited guy. You know, he's a guy that you know, had a storied career as a reporter. That's what he brings to being ringside. The fighters that are there, that's what they bring to ringside, and you've got to have that point guard. That's a tough spot. So that you're going to want a top broadcaster in that spot. What Max kept bringing to it, and I thought this is where his kind of lack of experience of either being a reporter or being a fighter or being a top broadcaster is that he's not able to – he talks about what he wants to see. He never talks about what he's seeing.
Exactly.
Or rarely does. And that really drove me crazy because then at the end he gets to Golovkin and, well, why weren't you this and why weren't you that? He didn't deal with any of the – like you just said, you were getting hit with the uppercut and then you adjusted. Why did you make that adjustment? You know, where do you rate this performance? Oh, and then give the guy the opportunity. He already doesn't speak very good English. I've interviewed him several times. You know, you can't do long questions with him. You know, we had him on this last week.
Right.
And it's not an easy interview. So you already got to adjust your style to how he is, and he refuses to do the translator or doesn't want to do the translator. So you got to go with what you got. But you don't. It just felt like Max kind of put all his stuff on Golovkin, and everybody kind of went with it. Yeah, he didn't look great. I didn't think he looked terrible. He won by knockout or by stoppage. He beat the guy up so much that they thought he was going to die. So which one is it?
This is the thing, too, is that how are you going to say he didn't look great, and how are you going to praise Gabriel Rosario saying, like, oh, he fought his heart out? So you're telling me that if Gennady wasn't in, 100, that he would have got him out of there even quicker? I mean, come on. I mean, isn't that a slap to the face to Gabriel Rosado, who did put his heart into that? And I thought that he was doing – honestly, I got to tell you, Gabriel was doing exactly what I thought he needed to do in the beginning. And we said it on last week's show, is that he would have to keep that pace up. But our train of thought was that eventually he was going to get brave. And sometimes getting brave, you're going to get caught. And you're going to get caught with shots, and they're going to change the momentum. And that's exactly what happened there, is the momentum started to change because Gabriel decided, I'm dancing away and I'm boxing backwards, but I might not capture the judges' eyes. I'm not making this fight more convincing for myself. And he fell into that trap of, derailing from the original plan and going into another plan that probably was not even the cohesion, which is sit and trade with them and try to outmuscle the bully. You don't do stuff like that. This is a lesson that needs to be learned by him, but I thought he did a great, great job. But don't undermine what his accomplishment by saying that Gennady didn't look good. Come on. Don't credit Rosado at the same time discrediting Gennady. You got to give them both their gist. And their gist is that they both came out and they fought, and they gave us a good bout for the start, for the second fight for the HBO card.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's kind of interesting. Sorry, I've been kind of texting. I'm still trying to work out this Larry Merchant thing because we're getting close to it. What time is Molina coming on?
He's coming in on about another 7 minutes. I got to text him as well and let him know that we're going to call him. He's in Mexico right now in Chihuahua, so getting prepared and ready for his debut fight. So,
sorry, hang on 1 second. I'm tweeting in. Should we pull in a caller? Or that's right, we don't have our screener, David Chen. That could be a dangerous proposition.
Well,
person like last week throwing something in. No, I liked the whole triple header. I actually really enjoyed the whole card from top to bottom. You know, it was. I think if anything that what Steven Espinoza has brought to the fight game is a little bit of a competitive nature between the two networks, and the innovations he's brought in with Showtime Extreme, and then also doing triple headers and quadruple headers. HBO's kind of have to step up their game a little bit. Luckily for them, they've got the budget. They've got a bigger budget to do it with. So hopefully we'll start to see things, you know, better fights. That's why, you know, you hope that the bar stays raised throughout the year, throughout this year. Mosley Malignaggi was like, wait a minute, like, what are you guys trying to sell us? Even Hopkins Cloud feels a little like contractual obligation or something. Maybe, I guess it is the last of Hopkins' deal that he signed with HBO, but that's a brutal fight. It's a brutal fight nobody really wants. I don't personally want to see. But I think everything.
Really? You don't want to see that fight? I'm actually interested.
On Hopkins?
I kind of want. I mean, here's a big guy. Cloud is a very big dude. He's aggressive. He's got good, decent power. You know, when Hopkins fought Chad Dawson, he fought a guy that was big, strong, but had an extensive boxing skill level that would shy anybody not to fight, except for Andre Ward. But Cloud has some flaws. He can, you know, with Glenn Johnson was able to expose a lot of what Cloud brings. You know, he does have a good chin, but he's slow. He's sometimes methodical. He's easy to figure out. There's no big old chest match against facing him. It's a good fight, but at the same time, you know, Hopkins, he's getting older. He does have a lot of tricks in those bags, but sometimes those mirages, it's just not enough to keep off a big, gritty, and a guy that's going to muster his way in to land some big shots. I want to see if this is the ending of the story of Bernard Hopkins, or does he continue being historical in his matches?
I'm all good with history at this point. I've seen all I need to see. Bernard Hopkins, I'm good. You know, here's the thing: why I don't like this fight. Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is just Hopkins. I just don't need to see him fight anymore. It's just kind of boring to me at this point. Particularly the Dawson fight, just really both those fights just kind of showed me it's over. Whatever happened in the Pascal fight, so that was a hell of a high note. I would have gone out that way. Instead. We're moving on to this fight, but Cloud was dangerous before. Why do you want to fight him now? Now that he got the win that really wasn't a win over Campillo and got completely exposed, now you're interested in him. But when he was a guy that was thought to be dangerous, he had a belt, he was a relevant guy, Hopkins didn't want any part of that guy. Cloud was a guy that I was always kind of pointing to is, I'm not really interested in the Pascal fight because he just seems limited to me. Dawson was always – I always felt like Dawson would beat him. But I thought Cloud, if he was active and kind of rolling, has a chance. He has a style that could stop a Hopkins, in my opinion. But the problem is Cloud's not very active, and I think that's where his loss really came from. Not so much that he's a terrible boxer. He's super flat, not very sharp. He just didn't look like a guy that fights very often. I think that's promotional issues or managerial issues – however many issues he's got, all those things have held Cloud back. He hasn't fully developed into the fighter that he could be. So, I don't know. To me, I just don't – I'm not that interested in it, particularly if it's going to – if Cloud is not on his game and rusty, this is going to turn into an ugly clinch fest. I have no interest in that. You know, I have none whatsoever. But, I mean, on the other side of it is this. Andre Ward's injured. He's not going to fight till the end of the year. So we're kind of getting that masterclass boxer this time of the year, although I consider Andre much more exciting than Bernard. So for the skill set, here you go. Here's your fight. But other than that, I mean, he already is the oldest champion. I don't need to see him break his own record.
I know. We're going to be calling in right now Oscar Molina here on Leaving the Ring. And we'll get back to HBO Boxing and also with the NBC Sports card. We're going to talk about that horrendous scoring that the judges did for the Rocky Martinez and JC Barrios' fight. And then we're going to roll into our fight schedule. And we can continue talking 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get our first guest in with us here. Going to call in right now, Carlos Molina, who's in Mexico training, getting ready for his debut under the Goosen Tudor banner. So it should be interesting. He's the twin brother of Javier Molina and the younger brother of Carlos Molina, who's in with Amir Khan and gave a great, great run against Amir Khan. Let's see if we get him on right now. And let him know we're going to call him in.
Hi. Thank you for calling. You have reached Bravo.
Bravo! That's the name of his trainer. at first, when I was talking to the Goosen Tutors, and they told me, call. Yeah, let me take this call here. I think it's them.
All right.
No, they didn't answer. So let me call them back in again. And see if we can get him on. Yeah, when I called Goosen Tudor and I asked them, they gave me this number. And they said, his name is Bravo. And I thought, I was like, excuse me? No, Bravo. And I said, yeah, Bravo. Bravo? What are we celebrating? All right, let's call him in right now so we can talk to Oscar Molina, twin brother. If you didn't get a chance if you haven't had a chance to see him, you know, this is his pro debut. That's probably one of the reasons. But he was on the documentary movie which is Born and Bred. Really good. It was a really good documentary. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that.
I haven't had a chance to see it.
Really good. It's on Netflix. You can catch it on Netflix, and you can even catch it on YouTube as well. Hello, can we speak? Hello. No, it didn't go through. Let me try one more time. And it's following these two youngsters going up the rankings and trying to make it to the Olympics tryouts, and the struggle and the culture of the fighters. You know, if you got a passion for boxing the way we do, this documentary is going to be on the top of the list. So hopefully they answer right now. Like I said, I did text them.
Hi, thank you for calling. You have reached Bravo. He is unable to take your call.
Okay, we'll try him in a few minutes again, and I will text him and let him know. We want to talk a little bit about what you thought about the JC and Martinez fight. Was it a good call? Was it the right call? Should we be majorly upset? JC Burgos is asking for a rematch. Should he get that rematch, or should he just move on? Because we know that he was clearly the winner of that fight.
I'm sorry. Repeat that again. You just totally cut out.
I'd like to hear your thoughts about the JC Burgos and Martinez fight.
Okay.
Good call. Was it? Does JC have a leg to stand on of asking for an immediate rematch?
Yeah, I think so. Without question. I mean, that was his big moment. That was his big title shot. I don't know about you, but I had him like 8-4, 9-3. I mean, I had him winning pretty big. Was it pretty? Not at times. I thought he had to kind of constantly change up a little bit. And he really mixed things up nicely. But I thought he came out and took command right off the bat. Nice jab, combinations. He was getting to the body. He was doing everything he needed to do, not staying around and getting hit too much. I thought Martinez was just kind of wild and unfocused. Burgos seemed to be using different aspects of either a plan or several plans, whereas Martinez was always trying to, like, figure something out. It was like he was spinning plates and not quite succeeding. You know what I mean? It was like – and then he got hurt late. I just thought it was a very clear win for Burgos. I thought if you could call something a robbery, that would be it. And I don't really understand why you wouldn't give him a rematch. If that belt means anything, then the sanctioning body's got to give him a rematch, without question.
You know, I've said this, is that Rocky Martinez, this guy outlives cats when it comes to winning matches. He always ends up on the end that he shouldn't be. He's a guy that not only you have to go in there and you could beat him convincingly, but you're just not going to win that fight. This is the second time around. The Beltran kid had a definite, I thought he won that fight, but didn't get the win. Now you have JC, he gets in there and he does his thing, and guess what? He just doesn't get that victory that he wants. The adjustments and what his game plan was for Burgos is against Martinez, I thought he was on point. You know, I made a joke on Twitter, and I swear Twitter is the funniest place to be. You know, I said, good call. It was a joke, and so many people were so upset. Like, really? Yeah, you're drunk? And it's like, come on, man. Relax. You know? But, yeah. I don't know what else more he can do, to tell you the truth. You know, I don't know. Yeah, should he get the rematch? Of course, and stuff. But it almost in a weird way, Gabriel, I don't know. I have this weird thought that why even go for that rematch? You want it. I say move on. We all know who's the definite winner of that one. You know,
it's the belt, though. He needs that belt.
Yeah, I know he needs that belt. But where else do you go? To me, Martinez right now, no matter where you put him at, the guy just has got this luck that is unbreakable at this moment. You know, I mean, you're not fighting against just him. You're fighting against his luck. There's so much luck this guy's had. You know, when he fought, you know, Burns, you know, this guy was all over the place. When you talk about looking sloppy, Martinez, I think that's just the way he fights. He's not a very polished guy. He slaps with his punches. He's really wide with those punches. He's predictable, but at the same time, he's difficult because you can't seem to get that win over him on paper.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think, you know, where does Rocky Martinez go? You know, that's a good question. I think he'd do it again. It was a fun fight. It was a good fight. It was competitive. I say why not? you know. And to me, a guy like Burgos, I mean, you're in the smaller weight classes. You need that extra 100,000 or 200,000 that belt is going to garner you. You need those TV dates. And that only way you're going to get that is through the belt. And I think that's the heartbreaking thing. Is here's a guy that did everything the right way, learned from his losses, came back, got to that big moment in the Garden, no less, and he gets robbed. You know, that's just not right.
It's not right. It isn't right. You know, like you said, he did all the right things. I think that's the million-dollar question, is you did all the right things. What more of the right things can you do against a Rocky Martinez? It's just one of those questions. It's going to be very difficult. You know, do you work on a little bit more with maybe, you know, putting your punches underneath your feet so you could try to get him out of there? But Rocky Martinez is almost like a slinky. The guy, you know, gets hurt, his body wobbles, you know, he gets all floppy.
Seriously.
But at the same time, that's almost his boxing style. So you really don't know if he's really hurt or not. You know, he's a really hard kid to read. Body-wise, not boxing skill level-wise, but body-wise and face expression is kind of hard to read. But I thought JC did pull it off. I thought he did enough. I thought he did the right things. He had the right game plan. He did his job. Unfortunately, you know, Rocky has the boxing gods. Maybe because he has the name Rocky. I don't know. I can't seem to figure it out. I don't think fight fans can figure it out.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, the guy – he certainly earned the name, right? Gets knocked around enough and keeps coming back. It's, you know, I just go back to when you look at a rematch, you always think, you know, you ask the question, who can do better? Who can get off more? Who had better success? You know, both guys had moments of success, but I thought, you know, Burgos had Martinez hurt, wasn't able to finish him. I think he's the fresher guy. He's a younger guy. He's now shown an ability to kind of move past losses and learn from those experiences. I think if he doesn't let him get, you know, if he leaves this as fuel rather than, you know, having it be a huge emotional letdown, you know, I think this fight could be a strength for him. At the very least, he was involved in a really, you know, high-profile fight in front of a lot of people, made some good money. And his career is by no means over. He's a young guy. Well, he's 25, 26. So, yeah, I'd say go straight to the rematch for both guys. At the lower weight classes, there's not a lot of things you can do television-wise. So why not do it with the guy that just gave you, you know, a really tough fight for the fans? That's how I'd look at it. It's really up to that sanctioning body. And if there's any justice in the world that body's worth anything, they'll make the fight.
Yeah, they have to make this fight. I'm going to try again, Oscar Molina, see if we can get him on. Hopefully they're ready for us here on Leaving the Ring. So and then we can conduct our interview, because we do have a scheduled interview for 2:30. You know, if you're a listener for a long time, you know that when it's a live show, that sometimes we got to work our way in getting an interview. Sometimes, you know, life kicks in, and these fighters, they're training, they're getting ready, they're getting prepared. So their schedule sometimes doesn't meet exactly the time they're supposed to be on here on the show. But that's okay, because we take privilege, and, you know, it's a privilege for us to speak to them, for them to give us the time to speak to us here on the show, and for the listeners to get a chance to hear what they have to say. It's always exciting, too.
Hi, thank you for calling. You have reached Bravo. He is unable to take your call at this time, but...
Okay, we'll try him a little bit later, you know, because he said they were in training camp, and he was going to try to make sure that he was available at that time. It's not a big deal. We'll work on that. Let's go move on. Let's talk about NBC fights here. Stephen Curtis getting his blowout over Edwin Ayala. What was up with his entourage jumping in and acting like, you know, it was the Riddick Bowe and Andrew Galata? Seriously, oh, what was that all about? I was confused. I was like, why is this guy jumping on Curtis, acting like Curtis did something wrong? He knocked your boy out, plain and simple. It was fair and square.
Oh, dude, yeah, it was absolutely fair and square. Like, what the hell? I have no idea. Like, Steve asked me the same thing on TNR, and I was like, I have no idea what that was. It was so surreal. But I think what it was boxing being boxing. You know, it's just hilarious. We get on, you know, everybody always quibbles. It's not really NBC, but whatever. It's on NBC, and it's as close to, you know, primetime boxing, you know, regular channel as it gets. And something like that always has to happen. Like, You know, on one hand, we're like, wow, you know, anybody that's tuning in that doesn't really normally watch boxing has got to look at that and go, damn, you know, I've been missing boxing. You know, this is some stuff I need to see. And then, like, a moment later, like, a riot breaks out. Because boxing's just like that relative that just, you can't take them anywhere, you know?
No, we're talking about relative. That was a relative that jumped in and was like, you knocked out my boy. Ah, you know, all yes. The thing that was missing was the telephone, you know, and it was at first, one of my really good friends, childhood friends, came over, Paul. He came down, I'm barbecuing. We're outside watching it, okay, first off, because, you know, we were smoking some cigars and don't like to smoke to travel into the house. So I had no sound. And I saw the knockdown, okay, and I'm like, ooh, he got caught. But then I turn around really quick so that I can just grab another beer and check on the food. And when I turn back, I see everybody in the ring. So I automatically dropped everything, jumped in thinking that something – happened, you know, maybe Curtis kicked him while he was down, something kicked off, you know, there was something that was justifiable of an almost riot at this event, right? And then I go back and I see this dude just jump in the ring out of nowhere, you know, jumping on his back, you know, acting like you just saw your boy get knocked out for no apparent reason, you know, that was the funny part about it. And I at the same time, I'm thinking, like, man, we haven't seen something like this in a long time, you know, in a really, really long time. But
yeah, no, boxing is just so bizarre. It's you kind of look at it, you know, nobody even really went, wow, this is really a tragedy. Like, God, you know.
It can't be. You know why?
It's terrible for boxing. But, you know, at the same time, for me, this is boxing. Weird shit like this always happens, you know. Like Larry Merchant says, every time you know, you think you've seen it all, then you go to another fight, you know. It's just whether it's a robbery or it's this, you know. I mean,
the thing is too is that when people make when you ask me why you're so in tune with boxing, I always say boxing is the comparisons of life, you know, because you never know what you're gonna get next. It just makes up itself while it goes. And, you know, you're not going to know. It's not script. There's no, you know, you can make your predictions, which we love to do here on Leaving in the Ring, but it's the waiting for when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen. Sometimes it rolls out to exactly what we say, but I think I get more of the kick and more of the excitement when it does it, when it's completely opposite and you just get that sheer excitement of the very first time watching it. You know, I could definitely, you have your dry spells. We've been through our dry spells where we're watching the fight and we're like, ah, you know, it didn't turn out to what it was supposed to be like. But then you get that one special fight that just turns it all the way around and makes you go, ah, that was it. That's the fulfillment. That's the fulfillment that we needed, you know? And it's you know, that's why I say it's an addicting sport. It's a drug. You know, we always are looking for that first Joan that we had the first time, you know, we got to watch the sport of boxing. But
oh, yeah, no question. I don't know. I felt kind of bad almost for Stevens, too, because it was like, here's this big moment, you know, huge knockout, a welcome addition, you know, to 160. That dude is, you know, like Steve actually brought this up. I thought it was really apt, was that a couple more wins, you know, you stay on this path. You're either going to knock somebody out at the top level or you're going to get a shot at one of those guys. And, you know, anything can happen with that. When you got real power like that, he could become a player all of a sudden. And he's, you know, we've got, what, Kid Chocolate, Fernando Guerrero fighting February 9th, right, at the Barclays Center. And those are two kind of East Coast guys. Guerrero fought, you know, out of Maryland, Salisbury there. And Kid Chocolate has New York roots. And he's going to be obviously middleweight, you know, title holder. He's going to be fighting in the Barclays Center. He's going to be defending that region. Well, you got another guy in the mix from that region, right there. Who's got a lot more, got a lot of flair, got a lot of ability, and he's got a lot of real power. I'm excited about Curtis Stevens. I mean, I don't want to go too crazy, too fast, because I mean, I think the guy he was fighting was overmatched, but I didn't expect that kind of explosive knockout.
I did not. Yeah, you know what? And I'll be the first to say that I was criticizing that first match. If you remember last week. I said if this was you're getting this back on NBC Sports, do you really want this to be the first match that a viewer that's surfing through the channels that wants to tune in. And you know what? I have to eat my words for that, because it was an opening that if you're surfing through the channels and you caught, you're going to stay there. You're going to go, oh, okay, this is interesting. And but I don't think it's going to veer off about the whole riot. I don't think people are going to go, well, I'm going to change it, because here's something that is to know about what happened that night. This is not new, because let's remember this. I had a fan that, you know, a listener hit me up and asked about the whole riot thing. Do you think that it hurt the sport of boxing yet again of being on primetime television? I said no, because look where UFC's still at. Let's not forget that they were putting Strikeforce, or I can't believe what actual program it was. They were putting it on primetime, and there was almost a riot as well. You know, this is combat sports. If you don't have a stomach of seeing guys emotions just overwhelming themselves and trying to attack themselves like animals, then you'll have no business watching a combat sport. You know, let's talk about basketball. Basketball has tons of riots. You know, you even have players kick the photographers. Same thing with football players. I mean, let's talk about how many football players shoot their wives, kill their wives, their girlfriends. You know, there's a lot of things in the sports. Overall, if it's something that's being watched over by millions, you're gonna end up seeing the bad, not just the good. You can't just not accept the good. There's gonna be bad involved with it. It's a sport, people. You know, these are people. These are actual human beings that do this for a living. They're not perfect. They're not right all the time. They can't be the most humble person you'll want them to be. You know, you can't believe just because what you see them doing there that they're in their everyday life, they're a good person, or, you know, good things are always going to happen. It doesn't work like that.
No, just like any one fight isn't going to save the sport, not one thing is going to
destroy the sport.
Exactly right. You know, I just don't really subscribe to that the sky is falling mentality. I mean, we've been through bigger scandals. We've been through bigger things. Does it make the sport look good? No, not really. But does it make the sport look like the sport? Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like, oh, there's boxing doing something bizarre again. You know, nobody got killed. You know, it was craziness. It was bizarre.
It was like, how dare you knock out my boy? How dare you knock out my cousin or my brother? You know, Steven, how dare you? And he jumps on his back like he wanted to piggyback ride back to where Ayala was, you know, laying at. I thought it was hilarious. I couldn't believe that. You know,
I thought it was great. I mean, it was just like, what the hell? Sometimes you just gotta laugh. You know,
the sport is
too funny. Yeah, it's just like I actually thought that the Chisora Hay brawl was a good thing. You know, it set up that fight. You got people talking. I thought it was pretty funny. And I didn't think it was bad for the sport at all.
No, I didn't think so.
It was the best thing that happened to that promotion.
It did cause a lot of buzz.
Hi, thank you for calling. You have reached Bravo.
I don't know what happened. So anyways, yeah, I thought it created enough buzz, if you weren't tuning in that night, by the talks on Twitter and on social networks alone, I honestly believe they brought a lot more viewers to that match to find out what happened. Gabriel Capilio, not his night.
Wow.
Not his fight.
So
what happened? What do you think?
That was, well, you know, the Samson's people said that, Samson Lekowitz's people said that he had a bad camp. You know, they had an awful camp. Things didn't go right. He was coming off an injury already. I can understand that. Not his night. Same time, you know, Kovalev was just not his power. You know, I think that the shot that Kovalev landed, it was a right hand to get things going. Just blast him that first time. I'd be hard-pressed to think of anybody in the division that would handle that shot very well. You know, you can blame it on bad legs for the camp or this and that, or he wouldn't have been in that position had this happened. But, you know, if my, you know, mom married a black guy, I'd probably be a little bit taller and half black. You know, we don't deal with ifs or what ifs or any of that. You deal with what is. Bottom line is that Kovalev landed a beautiful shot, and he didn't let the moment get away from him.
No, you know? He didn't.
I mean, I think Kid Chocolate could attest to this fact that you could drop a guy a bunch of times, getting him out of there is still not easy. And he didn't let him get out of that round. I thought he showed excellent finishing skills, real poise when he was doing it, real patience. What I took as being too slow to win this fight was just really patient enough to win this fight. Every time I see him, I get more and more impressed. I like Sergey Kovalev.
I you know what? We thought that Gabriel was going to be definitely the better boxer, more polished. We said that. Much, much polished fighter. Kovalev brings pressure. And bad camp or not, you can't take away what Kovalev was able to guarantee himself, which was a knockout, get himself a win. And it was a big, significant win because Campofield has names under his resume that you're going to go, wow. Okay, these other guys that were considered big punchers or hard punchers, speaking of Cloud, couldn't get him out of there and was outboxed, where Kovalev was able to pressure him back and get him in a position and put him there so that he can land his big shot. So it's impressive. I think that our main events were very, very happy. They're definitely, definitely happy. So, hey, kudos for him. I want to see what's next up for him. We'll be giving Main Events a call pretty soon to find out what is next for Kovalev so that we can update our listeners here on the show. Let's pass in some fight fans. Fight fans, you want to call in on our Leave the Ring radio cast show here, 347-215-7598. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Mr. Gabriel Montoya. We were trying Oscar Molina. I think they're still in training camp. They are in Chihuahua, Mexico. It's an hour difference over there. I did let them know we're going to call them at 3 o'clock their time, but we'll keep trying. But in a little short bit, we'll probably have Larry Merchant here on the radio show with us as well. But let's patch in some fight fans, see if they want to talk some boxing before we start rolling into the schedule or getting a hold of our next interview or our first interview. Let's go with the area code 951. Well, what's your name and what do you want to talk about here on the radio show?
No, I'm just listening, fellas.
All right, brother. We'll put you back on hold. Thanks for tuning in.
All right. Thank you.
Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to give Carlos Molina another shot here on the show and see if we can get a hold of him finally. Like I said, he is in training camp for his pro debut. He's the younger brother of Carlos Molina, and he's the twin brother of Javier Molina. So let's see if we can get a hold of him.
And if not, in about 8 minutes, we're going to have Larry Merchant. So hopefully Molina answers and we do a fast interview.
Yeah, you know, it's not going to be a really long interview because, like I said, you know, he hasn't done anything yet. It's interesting to hear his thoughts, especially from coming off of an injury, which was prolonged his chance of becoming a pro fighter. And kind of get his thoughts of what he thinks he has to do.
Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm Rob. Playing catch-up with his fighters, you know, and kind of being on the sidelines. I think that kind of sucks. You know, you're on the sidelines and you're waiting. You're waiting your turn. You're seeing everybody else get their shot. You know, his brother Javier had his loss with Reynoso, wasn't it? No, it wasn't with Reynoso who Molina lost to.
I'm sorry. Yeah, why am I blank? No, you just made me blank. Artemio Reyes.
With Artemio Reyes, right.
Yeah, thank you.
Which was a really good fight. I mean, he really put in some work there. Both of those guys, they gave a really good run against each other.
And from what I understand with Oscar too, is he's got a little more power in the right hand. He's got, you know, still that boxing background, but you know, he's got power where Javi is just a pure boxer. Javi hits solid, but he doesn't hit very hard. He's had some hand problems. So I'm curious to see, you know, because they're
got speed.
Brothers.
They both got speed, you know. I mean, that's one thing that they do. They, you know, besides being the fact that they're twins, they're very similar at. They mirror each other. Is their speed? But I think you're right. One carries a little bit more pop than the other. I was hoping we can get them on. You know, might have to be after the Larry Merchant. So I'll call Larry right now. How about that?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, he's with the in missing an interview. He's acting just like a pro fighter.
Well, he is in training, so we'll give him that. You know. My fans were calling in Larry Merchant, who has retired, and got to see what he's up to. want to call in, 347-205-75.
Hello.
Yeah, can we please speak to Mr. Larry Murtit?
You are speaking to him.
Hi, Larry. This is Dave Duenas with, obviously, you know, my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
So first off, congratulations with a great, great run in career in broadcasting. Always have been one of my favorite commentators, you know.
Thank you.
I want to ask you this question. I think I've always wanted to ask you this, and I think now I'm brave enough to ask you this question. Is just like a fighter, you see a different transition of personality and in skill level. In broadcasting, a broadcaster, a commentator, a blow-by-blow guy kind of goes through that same transition. Do you think that you went through that in your career?
I'm sure I did. I don't think I was the same guy last year as I was 50 years before. but I'm not. I don't know that I could define it. I think we all become prisoners of our past in a way, but sometimes we can use it in a positive fashion, and you've seen more, and you can see things in a perspective. Sometimes when you're young and you don't have perspective, you're a young firebrand, and sometimes you're an old firebrand. So I like to think that I was still a firebrand, but that I had more perspective and more knowledge.
You know, when it comes to mind, the reason I ask you this question is because, you know, I buy a lot of, fights on DVD and, you know, fights going back from the 70s and the 80s. And when you're on there of young, you're almost a guy that you're almost in disbelief. I'm here. You know, this is great. This is fun. You know, I'm trying this out and I got to try new things. But then it goes into the 90s where it was almost like, okay, I'm here, but now I got to really call out what is happening in front of me. You were real brass, and sometimes you said things were upset a lot of fans. But then your later career, the end of your career, you still were the same way, but you weren't as aggressive unless you were, what's the word I'm looking for?
Provoked.
Well, look, your perception is your perception. Back in the day, I had problems when I was a sports editor and editor of my college newspaper when I upset the powers that be. Okay?
Right.
So this goes back a long way. sometimes it has to do with who you're working with, because at the end of the night, we're all telling stories. And the story, by that I mean that there's a narrative, there's the fight itself, when you're doing a live event, and there's how you frame it, there's how you comment on it, there's how you wrap it up, and what questions you ask, so that sometimes if colleagues are addressing certain issues that you feel that have been covered well, and you go somewhere else, so and maybe I in fact infected my colleagues in some way, just as they influenced me. The important thing was at the end of the night, did all of us, and it's to me, it's a team that does this, including the producers and everyone who puts the show together. And there are issues. Maybe fighters have gotten more used to being questioned closely after fights and understanding what we tried to do during and before fights. Times change, athletes change, fighters change, and announcers change. Whether this is just merely the arc of a life of becoming more experienced and philosophical than more questioning and skeptical or even cynical, I leave to others to judge.
What was your original? How would you describe what your role was supposed to be? I had a discussion recently about something you said regarding Marquez and kind of alluding to the whole PED cloud that was surrounding him due to the Memo Heredia being in his corner. And I remember last year you and I had talked, and you didn't seem to think much of the whole PED thing, citing, you know, Vargas and Mosley is either losing or not looking very good on them. So I'm curious, what do you think your role is sitting ringside? Is it to be a journalist? Is it to be just a commentator? And are you
I think those are mutual things. They're not mutually exclusive.
Hmm.
As a commentator, I try to do my homework going in. I try to catch myself up on the stories of these athletes. I try when in the days before the fight to be up to the moment and interview everybody and follow stories and personalities and character and what got them here and how they are likely to respond to this opponent or this situation and at this time of their lives. That's what has always interested me. Whether I address them in the same way, I don't know. I hope I've learned something over time. But I hope that the end result is there, and that if something happens that's outrageous, I'm not afraid to say it's outrageous. This is, after all, boxing. And to try to say it in as entertaining a way and as a direct way to communicate what my thoughts are. And sometimes the spontaneous combustion between commentators and events, just there as there is between fighters and fighters.
That's true. Now, I was curious, you know, I was having a discussion with somebody about it, and I was actually kind of defending you and the HBO crew about it, because this person wanted, I know you're aware, I covered like the performance-enhancing drugs in the sport pretty in-depth, and they always want me to cover, well, why haven't you covered Pacquiao? Why haven't you outed Pacquiao? And this person was basically saying it was unfair of you to bring up Heredia and that cloud when you haven't brought anything up about Pacquiao. And one, I didn't think that was your role to be an investigator while calling.
No, I think it is part of my role. If I could investigate it, but has anybody brought up anything concrete about Pacquiao? Do you know of any concrete report, anything that he hasn't done, anybody he is directly connected with, who has been associated with the performance-enhancing drugs? If you could show me some of that, all of the suspicion about Pacquiao, okay?
Yeah.
And I understand the atmospherics in sports today, the skepticism and cynicism about superior performance. What was Henry Armstrong on? Okay?
Right.
I can name you five other guys who went through many weight classes in their careers. 70, 80, 60 years ago, Ray Robinson started as a lightweight and was knocking out middleweights with one punch. So does that mean he was on performance-enhancing drugs, which didn't exist at the time? So I tried to keep in perspective. There are exceptional athletes who can do exceptional things sometimes. At the same time, when athletes have either been accused of with reason or have suspicious connections, and we see it in their performance at the same time, then I think it's reasonable to say, okay, Marquez had a spectacular fight. I've loved watching Marquez evolve over the years into the fighter he became as a veteran. But here he is brazenly associating himself with somebody who was a known performance-enhancing drug enabler. And so that he has brought the suspicion on himself. I haven't brought it on him.
Right.
I could not agree more with you, Larry, on all the points.
But nobody has still pointed out, why is Pacquiao a suspect? Does anybody know? Can anybody give me? In other words, I'm not there to throw dirt on everybody who anyone suspects. I want to be I am a reporter by nature, and I want to hear what the accusations are and whether there's anything to them.
Well, you know, as a guy that's covered it for that particular aspect of our sport for like 3 years, I come back to the same thing when people say that to me. Is you show me the proof, I'd be more than happy to see it, or you give me a lead, I'll follow it. What I won't do is engage in kind of a witch hunt and say, well, that guy looks suspicious, so therefore he is. You got to have facts. You've got to have connections. And you're exactly right. If a guy hires Victor Conte or Memo Heredia into their camp, they're going to have to deal with the baggage that comes with it, and that's actually not your problem. I'll pass
right.
it back over to
and then,
yeah.
And then when they perform in unexpected ways, we're all – and then sometimes when they're caught and we can put one and one and one together and get three. And and I think in those occasions, it's legitimate to call out what the suspicions are. I mean, if proof means that we have the scientific results, I don't think we need scientific results to call out the fact that this person is doing some suspicious things, whatever it happens to be.
I agree. Where do you see HBO moving and commentating moving towards now? Do you think it's just going to be a matter of how the chemistry plays out? Is there a specific directive for how they want things to be?
I don't know that they are interested in, let us say, provocative commentary. I don't know, you know, what their goal is, what they think the role of the announcing team is. I only know that they hired a fighter, Andre Ward, who is doing some of their commentary, and I like Andre Ward a lot as a fighter, and we'll see whether he can, you know, he's that rare athlete who can
put words together.
Well, put words together, not always agree with everybody else,
right.
Have a stance, question stuff going on in there, and so forth. Not everybody is cut out for that. So I don't know, and I'm curious to watch him develop, and I think he's a smart young guy.
When you say provocative commentary, was that the leading of why you decided to retire, or was this just something that was in your mind for a while?
No. I retired because I had agreed a couple of years ago to stay two more years doing what I was doing, and then an after period in which I could be called upon to do certain things. That was my choice since I agreed to it. And I thought at the end of 35 years that was a pretty good run and the time for closure. But it doesn't mean you've seen or heard me for the last time, unfortunately, for some people. And I'm having conversations with various people in the sport about doing various things, and I don't know whether I'll do any of them or whether I'll just sit back and watch it all unfold.
Where do you see the sport going for you? I mean, it just seems the fights aren't as good as they used to be. Maybe I'm just getting older and more cynical or more nostalgic for when things were great when we were young. Or the fights just aren't that good anymore. And things have been this kind of cold war between Top Rank and Golden Boy and Showtime and HBO, kind of nobody's really crossing those lines. Do you think it's good for the sport, bad for the sport? Will it change? How do you see boxing?
You know, I've always sort of the economic model for boxing has evolved over time. The notion, for example, that the elite fighters fight no more than two times a year because they're making so much money and they're maneuvering with their handlers, promoters, managers, advisors, and so on, to make the most amount of money because it's a sport that we love for its competition and for its drama, but it's also a hard way to make money, and it's a business. And, you know, I think if we had more heavyweights, people wouldn't worry too much about it. In the old days, and I'm just talking about the 90s when we had a kind of last golden age of heavyweights for Americans. If you didn't have a good fight, well, in another month or two, you knew you were going to see a big heavyweight fight. So it was okay. And like any sport, you're not going to get a great event every time. But, you know, I'm a kind of Pollyanna in a way about what's coming up. I see a lot of young American fighters starting to get traction, like the two Garcias, like Rios, like Ward, like Broner. And I think, you know, maybe we're heading into a very good few years as these fighters become better known. I like some of the fights that are coming up, including the Rios Alvarado rematch, including Cloud getting a shot at Hopkins. I think Broner is a terrific young fighter and a guy who may become a major attraction. So I love both Garcias, for that matter. And so I'm probably more hopeful than I should be, but I am.
Larry, let me ask you one. When during the commentary and saying a phrase or saying anything in terms of how you would put poetry together, what do you think has gotten you in trouble the most with fans and with the HBO crew?
Huh. Well, you know, I've been very fortunate at HBO in a number of ways. But one of them is that from the start, I mean, they hired me. I had a track record. I was a columnist for 20 years. I worked in television for a few years before I started to do fights at HBO. So they knew who they were getting.
Right.
They knew that I was, you know, that I was going to try to inform people. I was going to try to entertain people. And occasionally I was going to try to surprise people. And I was going to say, and I was going to be skeptical of some matches and sometimes cynical and sometimes understanding how the game is played and that every fighter can't fight the toughest guy in the block every time out. So they knew what they were getting, and they wanted someone to be edgy. And it wasn't easy for them. You know, I would just like to point out that, you know, Tyson had an issue with me,
uh-huh.
A big issue. And so did De La Hoya. these guys were stars. These guys were pulling enormous audiences. And rather than fold up and go away, HBO said, look, we're paying you guys a lot of money, and we'll decide how we're going to do the shows.
What were some of those issues, if you can reveal that?
Well, the famous, it's no secret, the famous issue with De La Hoya was when...
His music?
When I made a comment about the music. and it was the comment was in relationship to the fact that not just... Now, I have to admit, myself, I'm supposed to know about words.
Right.
And I'm supposed to know that not everything is taken in the context and the full paragraph that you said it in. but that De La Hoya, who was the challenger for a guy who had been an Olympic gold medalist himself and had been a star attraction and been on many HBO broadcasts, Sweet Pea Whitaker, that Whitaker was in the second place in his promotion. It was almost like he was the challenger.
Right.
A longtime champion. And that in that context, I said, I find that this music sucks. Now, I think it was a wrong word to use because it provoked an emotional response. And I was wrong. And I apologized later. And Oscar De La Hoya, at the time, his promoter was trying to get him to be more popular with Mexican fans who didn't particularly love him, et cetera.
Right.
So, but they stood by me. And it was the same thing with Tyson when his antics out, when we were calling attention to all of the distractions that seemed to be distracting him outside of the ring, not in the in wanting to just diss him or to just exploit some sensational story. It was in the context of a young fighter who seemed to be distracted from what he does and what got him there. And sure enough, eventually it contributed to his downfall. But at the time, after he lost to Buster Douglas,
mm-hmm.
And then tried to regain the championship through his promoter and through a corrupt sanctioning organization trying to overturn a knockout. And so I had a few words to say about that, and not just on air. I actually testified at a hearing where that was being adjudicated, and testifying to the effect that the promoters and the sanctioning group was trying to win outside the ring what they lost inside the ring. So there were people around Tyson who were trying to egg him on to show that he could still have the power to shake things up. And they tried to get HBO to take me off of his fights.
Wow.
And HBO said to him, we're paying you an awful lot of money to fight. You cannot tell us how to do our fights. Now, just think of a network. He was like a franchise to HBO.
Right.
They were selling tremendous amounts of subscriptions to HBO for Tyson fights. And unlike a normal network, which there have been, I don't want to say many, but a number of occasions where announcers and commentators have been literally kicked off events because that franchise, the Masters Tournament, pro football, whatever, was so important to the network that they were not going to jeopardize it. So HBO was a different cat in this jungle. HBO had a different idea of what all of their television was, and that included their sports, their coverage of sports. So I was fortunate that the way I saw this colorful and sometimes corrupt world was the way they were happy to have it portrayed, but the promoters and the managers and the fighters often gave them grief for what I was saying, and they didn't care.
Mm.
And so, you know, I was lucky to have them.
It's an interesting sport in that oftentimes performers come along, as a writer or somebody from the outside, and they try to do something good, like the Muhammad Ali Act. You know, I think it's over 10 years old now. I'm not sure if everything's quite been followed within that. It seems like a sport that's kind of resistant to change. And like the quote I mentioned earlier was that you don't change the game. The game kind of changes you. We've seen that with De La Hoya's company come in. Do you think,
a change. You know, there have been changes, actually. There is no monopoly.
True.
Showtime is now a serious challenger of HBO.
They are.
Top Rank has been the best promoter out there for a long time, but now they're getting seriously challenged by Golden Boy. Economic models, as I said earlier, do change. There's when a guy like Mayweather and also Pacquiao are making extraordinary amounts of money. I mean, nothing like it in the history of sport, what those guys have made. And so everybody in the sport tries to position themselves to get into that high niche. It changes things. Everybody's maneuvering to get there. Nothing, there have been maneuvering going on forever in boxing, okay? Floyd Patterson defended his title against a guy who had won an Olympic gold medal and had never fought professionally before. There have been, you know, boxing is an every man for himself sport in and out of the ring. It attracts hustlers and rustlers. Many of them are colorful characters that are interesting to portray. And in one way or another, it's the same, but in a different way. It's a little bit more corporate today, stuff has been going on in boxing forever.
Right.
That's very true. Well, Larry, thank you so much for taking a short notice interview and spending time with us and educating us and just sharing with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. You guys seem to know your stuff, and you're a welcome change in the game too.
I appreciate that. It does. Everything does evolve. It just seems, I don't know, as a guy that's trying to reform, it seems like when you start speaking the truth.
Well, maybe one of the things that happens when you get older is you don't try so much to reform. You just try to shed light and hope that incrementally things get a little better.
Yeah. I can definitely dig that. Well,
all right, thanks, guys.
In the ending segment of this, I just want to say to you, Larry, this music sucks. I always thought that was my favorite line, man.
And actually, I liked the music. But then and there, I didn't.
Yeah. All right, Larry, thank you again for coming on, Leaving the Ring. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Larry Merchant just left the show right now. If you missed the interview, don't worry about it. It'll be on the website, on the archives. It will replay. I was just checking out the website because some people were saying that it's not on there right now. It's not playing. I had to hit.
It is. I sent out the right link. Just check my Twitter. Hit that link, and it should be. I mean, I thought I put out. I figured out how to put the right link out. So don't tell me that I'm doing it wrong.
I'm going to try just one more time before we get off the air. I want to see if the Molina people are ready for us. Just give them a shot really quick, and hopefully they'll be ready to come on the radio show and talk to us, Oscar Molina. If not, we're just going to go to our fight schedule and get out predictions really quick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I got that. I'm all ready with that.
Okay, so hopefully we can get Bravo to answer his phone so we can talk to Oscar.
No, this is not Oscar. Who's this?
Is this Bravo?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Bravo, this is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya from Leaving the Ring.
Oh, hey, how you doing, man?
Good, brother. We had a scheduled interview for with Oscar.
Yeah, you know what? I have to get the charger. We've been running all over the place, dude.
Yes.
Can we schedule something? Give me like 20 minutes and call me back?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, cool. All right, then, bye.
All right, bye. Okay, always on a live show, man. You never know what's going to happen. So we're going to go into that fight schedule and our predictions, and then we'll give Bravo and Oscar a call back, Oscar Molina.
Okay. And here we go. Friday night at the Turning Stones Casino in Verona, New York. Sergey Zinzirik, 37-1-1 versus Brian Vera, 21-6. In support there, we have Tony Luis, 15-0 versus Miguel Gonzalez. And Jackson Jr., 13-0 versus Dante Craig, 2014-1. And Ryan McKenzie, 11-0 versus Rayshon Myers, 13-1. Heading back up top, Zinzirik, Vera. I'm taking Vera, and I'm taking him by knockout late. I'm not sure if Zinzirik is in quite the condition that he needs to be for this fight. He didn't really come out to the U.S. As soon as he should have, in my opinion. He's been out for a couple weeks, 3 weeks. I like Vera's style to kind of rough him up, get him in the inside. It's going to take him a while to kind of get him, get Zinzirik into the corner and kind of work his body and slow him down. But I think eventually Vera will. He just strikes me as a professional guy who's always in shape, always ready to go. He works at several different gyms over the years, but there's never been a question about his work ethic. And I just think that he's gonna ask some questions that Zurich's not going to be able to answer.
I agree with you. You know, same thing. You know, I'm not sure whether or not if he's conditioned correctly against Vera. You have to be conditioned correctly against Vera. He's one of those guys that is just going to apply a lot of pressure. There's nothing that stands out that's going to say that Vera's going to have a, you know, it's going to bring a boxing lesson. But what stands out, and you know that he's going to bring, is a big thump in his punches. He's a strong, durable, comes forward, who'll trap you in that corner if you allow him to. And if you don't try to use your legs and box him or keep your hands moving, Vera will close in that distance and just start letting his hands go. So I'm with you on this one. I think he stops. I think he gets the late knockout for himself.
Yeah, as far as and then moving to the Paramount Theater in Huntington, New York. Showtime's Showbox, Demetrius Andrade, 18-0, versus Freddie Hernandez, 30-3. There are some whispers. I'm not sure if the weigh-in has happened just yet because we've been on the air. But I'm hearing that Andrade may not make the weight, or they've worked out something regarding the weight. Let me see if it's even come up. I don't think anybody's done it yet. Nope. They have not weighed in. So I'm leaning towards Freddie Hernandez, although I still think he's going to be Freddie Hernandez. So if the kid worked it out and they're coming in like 158 or something, then Andrade is not going to make that same sacrifice, and he's probably going to be a little stronger. I think he's too big for 154 as it is. I think he's a 60. He might even end up being a 68. I mean, you just look at his legs. There's a lot of room to grow there. So that's a tough one just because of this weight issue, but I'm going to take Andrade, probably by decision.
I say the same thing with Andrade. The thing about Andrade is that we got to see him step up. He's almost been he's been pretty much groomed, in my opinion. We had a chance to speak to fans and people that really on with Andrade, thinking that Demetrius is going to be an impact at the middleweight division, but it's hard to really envision that because you don't see a whole lot of him, and what you do see of him, it's not against stellar competition, it's against patent competition. So I like to see the next move. Hopefully 2013 he starts doing a little bit more to see whether or not there's some truth that he's going to be a major player at the 160-pound division.
Yeah, I just – nothing about him excites me. I got to be honest.
It's hard to be excited from a guy that you get, you know, you rarely ever get to see and is rarely ever doing anything in the ring against real stiff competition.
Yeah, I mean, Freddie Hernandez is, I wouldn't call him a stiff. You know, I think he's a bit of a step up here.
I'm talking about in the past, though.
In the past. Oh, I mean, it's been brutal. Well, the last fight, you know, it was Angel Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
And I still contend. I don't care what anybody says and how much they try to throw out there. Like, he was all good and ready to train. Like, I just heard way too many people telling me that was just not the case. And however it shook out, you know, they eventually put the fight on and everything. I still just think that was wrong. And dude, that was last foot. That was last February. I don't know. Andrade is just doesn't. There's just nothing about him that really excites me. And in fights like that, I don't think you learn a lot, you know? I mean, then he fought Rudy Cisneros out of Chicago, who's – I've never really thought of him. He was one of the dudes that was on the original Contender, and he'd lost early on. And Alex Loros, you know, another guy. Yeah, just a guy, you know? When you're fighting that level of competition and you're getting early knockouts, I mean, he only did 5 rounds last year. Against competition that gave him no resistance whatsoever. That's not developing a fighter. It's building a record.
Yeah, and there's a big difference there. You know, I think that some people got to look at. You know, you said it right. It's not you're not building a fighter. You're building a record. And sometimes that built the record. It's built for you to fail as soon as you get to that point where you're supposed to shine, where you're supposed to really show that you're the goods and you're the reason why that these investors came in and put all this money, you know, towards you. But you end up breaking the bank a lot of the times, you know, 9 out of 10, you break the bank and you end up just bellying up because you weren't built. You were patented up.
Exactly. If a guy like this starts asking you questions, you know, and you don't have the answers, it could get ugly. You know, a guy like Freddie Hernandez, he's somebody that I wouldn't really underestimate him. A lot of people just kind of look at him because of that. They look at him because of the Andre Berto fight, but they don't. I'm trying to pull up his record. You know, and they kind of dismiss him, but. He's not a guy that's going to go easy, I don't think. I think he's going to probably end up taking this guy rounds if he doesn't get blown out super fast. So I'm hoping that this conditioning thing, I'm going to text him with somebody that's there trying to find out what's going on. But, you know, I mean, this is a guy that was not expected, Freddie Hernandez, to lose to Louis or to win over Louis Colazzo.
Right.
And he took him to the woodshed. And I don't know what was up with Colazzo in that fight, but Freddie Hernandez had to have it that night, and he did. Very clearly.
Colazzo was that there was a guy that just wasn't fighting often, you know, and when you're on that shelf and you're collecting dust, that's exactly what you end up have to shake off is dust in the ring. And it's the wrong place to shake dust. It's the wrong place to shake rust. So there's with Freddie Hernandez and Andrade, there's questions to be answered. It is an interesting fight, and we're more or less going to find out. Has this built up record? Has it benefited him? Is he going to, you know, show us that it's more than a you know, built up record, rather, you know, and show us that he's not just that the record alone. There's more to him than just those unknown names are in that slot underneath his name. So we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Just letting that guy know that with the egg picture and like the 7 followers that you're in. Dude, I blocked you like 30 minutes ago, so you can just stop. You can just stop. Go do something else with your day, something productive. Bugging us isn't going to work. Moving on to Saturday night. At the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. On Showtime, Lucas Matisse, 32-2 versus Mike Dallas, 19-2-1. Underneath that in support, you got Selkirk Aiden, 23-1 versus Jesus Soto Carras, 26-8-3. And then you've got in the third televised fight, even though there's going to be some Showtime Extreme action shown, Jermell Charlo, 19-0 versus Harry Jorgi, 25-1-1. I mean, it's a tough fight. I think people are underestimating Mike Dallas. Although, you know, I've looked into his career, looking into his amateur career, he's always kind of a guy that kind of got close to the top and then would lose. And as a pro, he's kind of had his biggest moments and he's lost. Now he's with Virgil Hunter. I think they've shown marked improvement working together. You know, Dallas seems to be very committed to his program, and the fundamentals, little things that he's changed, footwork, fixing his balance, bringing him in a little bit, you know, the punching frame a little bit tighter, teaching him how to fight on the inside, how to relax on the inside, and how to not fight somebody else's game. All those things, that versatility, it's gonna serve him well against Lucas Matisse. Does he hit hard enough to keep him off him? I don't know. I don't think so. I'm picking Matisse late, but
I think he has decent power. I think that the power that Mike Dallas does bring, it is decent. You know, it's not that one punch, you know, sleep of touch type of power. Matisse obviously is the power puncher in this fight, but could he catch him with something that Matisse doesn't see? I think so. I think that whatever the fight fans are out there not knowing much about Michael Dallas Jr., I think you're right, absolutely, with him being on the tutelage of Virgil Hunter. He does bring now more of a variety of a threat than he would have if he would have stuck with Jackie Callen and staying at the wild card. You know, and here's the fact, too, is that this is not a new camp. He's been in the Bay for quite some time, I believe a year or maybe a little bit over a year. So he's been really, really trying to refine those tools and better himself and get that footwork to work for him and work on combinations and doing other things. I think that also, too, it benefits him, the fact that he's working around other world champions and other fighters that bring a different outlook than whether he would get from sparring partners. You know, if you're looking to have a strategy and know how to deal with pressure, you put like a Brandon Gonzalez, who's a bigger guy, who can come in, he's got fast hands, but then you put an Angulo there as well to push him back and to get him used to somebody on top of him consistently. So I think the varies that Michael Dallas brings to this match is a whole lot. Now, whether or not it's gonna apply on fight night, it's a whole different ball game. You know, I know doing it in sparring and doing it amongst your peers and the people that are watching you and they're rooting for you, it's different. There's somebody there to give you confidence. There's actually somebody there to stop it during sparring to tell you, you made this mistake, let's redo this again. In fight night, there is no pulse. There is no momentum of somebody cheering you on. There's just the momentum of yourself making sure you do your job against a power puncher with a guy with some pressure. At the same time, Matisse brings not just, you know, that power punching style, but he does bring some boxing skills. I'm really impressed with Matisse. I've always said that I think he's the much more polished fighter between him and Madonna. And you keep seeing that he's gotten better and better. And that confidence that he brings now, even more so than from the beginning that we've seen him, it really just comes through in the ring.
Yeah, without question. I mean, it's Matisse is going to be an interesting guy to deal with. I mean, because it's almost the way, like, you look at, like, Trinidad, when they say, like, oh, well, he's one-dimensional. Yeah, but that dimension was pretty vast. It was pretty great. You know, and he catch you with that power, and he was relentless with his pressure. He's actually kind of underrated boxer. But Matisse, I think, is underrated. People kind of look at him, oh, he's just a straightforward brawler. And you've seen him kind of add little wrinkles to his game, a little bit of better footwork, moves his head when he punches a little bit better. Little things like that. I think this is a really fun matchup. I think it's going to be a brutal fight, and Dallas is going to have to—he's going to have to kind of draw a line in the sand at some point, or maybe even just a circle, and just kind of keep turning him and walking him into shots. But he's going to have to stand his ground just a little bit in order to get some respect from the TJ. I think
he's almost in that same position where Gabriel Rosado was at right now. You know, fighting Gennady. You know, you got to have your best game on Saturday night. You're going to have to make sure that you can stick to that game plan to be successful. And we've said it numerous times. It's easier being said than done. He's going to have a guy that's going to be there. He's going to come at him. He's going to throw some angles. And, you know, that's the thing, too, though, is that what people don't understand is, fight fans understand this, is that it's hard to get sparring partners, even though you got some real good talent in his gym, you know, working with him along the side with Virgil Hunter. But it's hard to get somebody to mimic somebody that sometimes throws his punches in an awkward position, an awkward angle. You know, so you're basically at the same time you're preparing yourself to be the best you can possible for fight night. You gotta at the same time be intelligent enough to adjust to those subtle things that you were not prepared for. You know, these weird angles. Matisse is not the most traditional boxer. He does throw punches that are just gonna come from different angles and combinations. So you have to figure that out on the fly, and that's something hard for a lot of people to do, is to figure it out on the fly. I can only think of maybe a handful that can do that automatically and make sure that they're successful and they take away your best arsenal of coming forward or defense.
It's a classic clash of styles, you know. I'm going Matisse late. Sokuk Aiden, Jesus Soto Carras. I don't think there's any questions here. This is just a brutal fight.
It is going to be a good fight. I like this fight a lot. So go ahead, I'll hear your pick.
I'm probably going with Sokuk. I think that Soto Carras is just, he's kind of looked more and more like a little more shop worn each time as little rolls down the hill a little quicker. Whereas Aiden, I think, was shaking off some rust. That Guerrero fight, I thought, was probably the best thing for him. I mean, not a loss, but the rounds with a high-level guy. I expect him to stop Soto Carras late on cuts.
You know what? I agree with you. Soto Carras is a throwback type of fighter, a guy that kept himself busy when not fighting. And when I mean keep himself busy, we're talking about keeping himself in wars at the Maywood Boxing Gym, you know? And a lot of time, I'm not always in agreement of a fighter going all out at a sparring session or a smoke session. You have to kind of reserve yourself, you know, put something away in the drawer so that when it's needed, you can pull it out. And this is something that's needed, you know, going against Adrian. He's going to need that reserve, but I don't think there's anything left. I don't think that even with fighting Madonna, that was a sign to me. You had a smaller guy that did carry a punch. I don't think he should have been able to carry that much of a punch, though, at 147. So I think that the legs, the chin, the skin, the overall of his body is now we're starting to see the signs of a guy that's just a wear and tear.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it's a pretty clear cut. And then moving right along, Jermell Charlo, 19, I don't really think much of this kid, but Harry Jaworski, 25-1-1. You know, I mean, he's just kind of a guy. So I think Charlo will probably stop him late. You know, that's pretty much it.
When we talk about building a record or building your fighter, that's something that Charlo and his team are going to have to really look at and think about at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You know, it's kind of funny. I remember tweeting, as we were talking, Steve asked me, like, how does this fight get on Showtime? And when we were at the Khan fight and Charlo fought on that card, I said, I reported him as an Al Haymon fighter. And somebody said, no, he's not. And now, I guess a few weeks later after that, maybe 3 weeks, he signed with Al Haymon. So that's the answer to Steve's question, how it got on Showtime. Because this is like an ESPN-level fight, Charlo versus Jaworski, I think. That's really the thing. Showtime had a really good year last year, but some of these fights, yeesh. They've kind of lowered their bar, and you know, when you do volume, just because they give you more of something doesn't mean it's good. Sometimes two of shit is just shit. So I don't know. It's a good card, I think, overall, though. Matisse and the Soka Gaten fight, those are great. The Charlotte fight, not so much. But, you know, it's a bit of an appetizer. Maybe somebody gets knocked out spectacularly and everybody gets energized, and then the other fights have something to live up to. So that is your weekend fight schedule.
Well, there you go, fight fans. I don't know, Gabe. Do you still have any time here so we can call in?
I don't. I actually have a something scheduled right like in the next few minutes, like 5 minutes. I mean, do you want to try them again? I just, I'm kind of stuck here.
let me just try just really quick, and it's not going to be a very long interview, and if it's not, we can reschedule it with him. Let me see if I can get him on right now. Okay, let's get him on. Fight fans, again, you know, we're doing an early show, so if you're tuning in, don't worry about it. You'll catch it back on the website on leaveitintheringradio.com. We're calling in right now. Another attempt with Oscar Molina. Just really quick, a five-minute interview with him, and then we'll be going off the air. And I appreciate everybody that tuned in and listened to the radio show. We had Larry Merchant come on a little earlier. You know, thing too is Oscar's in Chihuahua.
Hi, Mexico. Thank you for calling. You have reached.
Okay, no problem. You know what? I'll just let them know we're going to do it another day because I know they're having their pro debut and you know they're running around and getting crazy. You know, it's kind of crazy. And this was just a favor. You know.
Yeah.
So no problem. No biggie. Anyways, fight fans, thanks for tuning in and listening. I apologize if I didn't even get you on here. You know what? I just forgot that we didn't have David Chan, so I wasn't even looking at the switchboard.
Of course, yeah. After last week, he just can't. You know, too many people trying to call in, like guys like that dude that seems very angry with me on Twitter. There's a few of them. We just can't let them through unscreened. It's kind of dangerous, you know. So we do have kids who listen to the show, you know. We don't want that.
Absolutely, man. Anyways, again, enjoy this week in fights. Talk to you guys really soon. And, Gabriel, like always, brother, always fun.
Always, dude. It was kind of nice. I kind of like the afternoon. I've got a nice view here in this undisclosed location. Dave,
nice. Yeah.
I'll talk to you this weekend.
All right, everybody. Don't drink and drive, man. Be safe. Stay with your family.
Peace.
Night.